Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Monday Labor Day edition of The Drive. Hope everybody enjoying the day. If you had the day off, appreciate it. And it may be our last day of feeling like real summertime for a week or so, because it was hot. It was really, really hot this weekend. Not just the weather. Auburn football was en fuego on Saturday evening, as well as the Tigers roll to a 73-3 win over Alabama A&M. So we're here with you. I mean, we always are here on Labor Day. I know most a lot of folks get off, but get the day off. But the
maybe both.
Well, you may be. Hopefully. But when you have your first game of the season and it's the first big weekend of the season, we're not gonna make you have to wait another day to be able to join us. So welcome into the Monday Drive. That's Brian Matthews giggling over there.
Oh,
and Dan is
my final appearance.
Maybe, you never know. Just depends on who's listening. Dan's not just here. He's running the board because Drew under the weather, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose Drew's not feeling great, so I'm willing to step into the control room seat and get on the mic in Sector 7G, right? The Homer Simpson setup we got here for the board. I'll be pushing the buttons today, deciding whether or not to turn off Brian's mic.
You better keep the finger over.
Yeah,
that button.
That's right. Well, the thing is, he didn't have you turn. He didn't have the mic turned on until just as you decided you were going to start commenting.
Right, so, good timing.
No antics over there, Brian Matthews.
I'll try.
Brian just celebrating the holiday. I mean, and celebrating.
Right.
I mean, why not? I mean, it's not very often Auburn has 70 point wins.
It's not, and it's not often that Auburn has 450 yards. 451 was it?
And it could have been a whole lot more. I mean, think if we'd had the extra 10 minutes of playing time.
How many times in Auburn football history have they had three straight touchdowns on three straight plays from scrimmage as an offense, like they did in the first quarter?
Right? I don't know that record.
First drive for Auburn ends with the Jarquez run,
right?
The first play of the next drive is the long touchdown to Keandre, I believe. And then I believe the first touchdown.
Track of everybody, so many different players scored touchdowns. And the wild thing, I'm looking at this as we're moving on through. Auburn was dominated in time of possession because they scored so quickly. Auburn's longest scoring drive was 2 minutes and 31 seconds.
Yeah, their time of possession was 41 and a half minutes to Alabama A&M and 18 and a half for Auburn. That's crazy.
Yeah, and Auburn got a lot of that late when they weren't scoring on every play. But I mean, it was a fun game.
And then what was the second passing touchdown was the Cam Coleman, which I believe was also on the first play. I mean, Auburn had three straight plays, from where they scored not just touchdowns, long touchdowns.
Right.
Big plays were a problem last year, Brian, among some other
Auburn
issues
had like
with the
16
offense.
16 plays of 20 plus yards.
Was that the one where Thorne had six in the, because there's a record, Ferguson mentioned it from last year, where Auburn did something only 18 times all season, and they did it six times against. Maybe it's a Thorne completion of 20 or 25 yards or more. Where I mean, he didn't go downfield all that often.
Yeah, at all. these weren't all a 7 yard hitch that the receiver turns into a 30 yard play.
No, there were multiple downfield
passes,
and that's something that was missing from the Auburn offense last season. And I don't think it was because Hugh Freeze didn't want to go.
No, it's because
downfield.
It's because there weren't people to be throwing to downfield a lot of the time.
And at times maybe they didn't know if Peyton Thorne would have the time to be able to throw downfield as well against the better pass rushes.
But you need people downfield that can make the plays too. And what a difference! What a change that receiver room. We've talked about it all summer and all fall camp leading up to it. And an unbelievable showing there in game one.
No, the Auburn appears to have, Brian, and you're probably less surprised than other people because you've been following these receivers since they were on the radar as sophomores in some cases. Auburn appears to have downfield threats at receiver.
Many of them.
But that's something where... You know, sitting in the room with some guys who have watched Auburn football for decades, like there aren't a lot of seasons where game one, granted it was against an FCS opponent, but there have not been a lot of seasons where if folks had asked you after game one, you know, tell me about the downfield threats in Auburn's passing game, you would have felt like there were multiple real options you could talk about.
Oh, I think we could be on the cusp of an historical stretch for the Auburn passing game. I mean, the 451 yards passing were the second most all time, and that's just really game one. And that's just game one of a large – I know the opponent, I understand that, but it's game one of a bunch of freshman receivers, game one of Hugh Freeze finally running his offense with his coordinators and his guys intact.
Second most all time, by the way, to the 14 Iron Bowl, which would make it a Jordan Hare Stadium record for Auburn, which is also, I believe – they were on the verge of a Jordan-Hare Stadium record in scoring. It's the 95 game against Chattanooga was where Auburn scored the most points they've ever seen. That's the game where they score in the modern era of Auburn football.
You're right, in the modern era. Well, I mean, it wasn't Jordan-Hare Stadium back then either. So I mean,
that was in the 90s. It was
right.
You're right.
When you're going pre-modern era, it's back to Cliff Hare or just Auburn Stadium. But
the margin of victory, you go back to 1932 against Erskine.
Erskine.
Okay. Yeah. That's.
And again, I mean, it could have been a lot worse. Yeah. It could have been a lot worse. Yeah. I mean, the second half, 10 minute periods there in the second half, and the first, the first team basically watched the second half.
I speculated in the press box with Bill, and I wonder what you think of this, Brian. I wonder if the amount of time the first half took, like just not, I mean, it took 30 minutes off the clock, but the real time spent in the first half, if you had a second half like that, I wonder how much time Hugh Freeze would have had to do some of his other, some of the other things he wanted to accomplish this weekend with all those recruits in town.
Game would have lasted till 11 o'clock.
Yeah, I don't know.
I didn't even catch that. I didn't realize the first half was so long.
It was pretty long.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get to halftime until it felt
it was close to 8:30.
I didn't even clock. I was so busy trying to keep up with all the score,
because every time you look up, there was another big play.
Let me tell you, that was a big day for Auburn recruiting too, in a lot of different ways. We'll talk about that more. But there were some great players here, and I think Auburn is again on the cusp of something special there. They're already a top five class, but they can move up into the top two within the next month or so if everything goes right, and there's a good chance it will.
Could not have asked for, unless you got a dramatic game with a big, game winning moment at the end or something like that. I don't think you really could have asked for more from if that was your first time ever at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Like, I feel like you got a pretty good.
And even if it wasn't your first time at Jordan-Hare Stadium, I mean, guys like, Naeem Offord has been in and has seen Auburn play
big games,
but the crowd. I mean, there was a crowd that was there. They were excited. They were there. The students stuck around.
Yep.
I mean, that says a lot, I think, to the recruits. Well, they had to go, man, this is this kind of atmosphere for Alabama A&M.
Exactly. And let's take Elijah Melendez, for example. He was a Miami commit, decommitted last week before he came up to Auburn for his trip. I mean, how many games has he probably been to see Miami play at home and from a small crowd, big yep. games? And he comes up to Auburn and sees Auburn against Alabama A&M and sees that crowd, the way they're into it. The student section was incredible, I thought. Could even hear them sealed up in the giant, you know, skyscraper Lego set in the sky or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was good. It was impressive. And if they keep this up, man, I can't imagine what it's going to look like. Is it September 28th when Oklahoma comes to town?
It is a little bit like a Lego block on top of it. I'll see you guys at the block. I'll see you guys up there if you want to start. We can have block parties, you know. I thought it was a, I mean, I was thinking about that during the first half, like if you were, and I guess if it wasn't your first time, it's equally true. But if that was your first time at Jordan Hare Stadium, like if you were a kid. An atmosphere and environment and things. You know, it was little hot, but you know, I mean,
thank God we were in the press box. Well, I was only in the press box about half the time of the first half. It felt like there'd be a big score and I'd be able to run down and visit the family and everything. And I really felt bad for them. Yeah, and they're
roasting.
You know, I mean, of course, it's not like there was. I mean, the sun didn't go down until second quarter sometime. But there was no.
It felt like one of those days in Alaska where the sun doesn't go down.
There was no breeze blowing. There was no. I mean, it was just no air moving. Yeah. I mean, Kennedy was like soaking, was drenched in sweat. The two and a half year old. I mean, it was hot. It was really, really hot.
It's supposed to break. You know, hope that happens.
It's supposed to. It's supposed to get some rain, and then it's supposed to just be in the 80s. That probably Hugh Freeze and staff are probably going, oh, dang it, come on now. You know, you can be hot on Saturday, but the fans, I think, will really appreciate if the weather forecast holds up, and we've got a high in the mid 80s.
Yeah, and it is after the kickoff, so that'll be much better.
Oh yeah, no question about it. All right, we're just underway. Here on the Monday Drive. Yep, the Labor Day edition of the Drive. Bill and Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Now, we're going to have some changes to the schedule this week. And it's partly because of Labor Day. Andy Burcham let us know today during the press conference with Hugh Freeze, which we were all there for that, that he normally has... They normally have meetings today, but the meetings today were canceled because of Labor Day. So he has a meeting tomorrow. So he won't be able to be in tomorrow. And then Justin Ferguson is hoping he can get to a Braves game.
Braves season ticket holder.
Yes.
Justin Ferguson wants to pop in.
To the Braves game on Thursday. So... Andy's going to Wednesday in the 4 o'clock hour. Justin is going to Wednesday in the 5 o'clock hour. And Jason Caldwell, who's usually with us Wednesdays, is going to move to Thursday. So we're just shuffling things around. And then Friday we find out we're on the road. We've got and the Drive going to be at the Plaza Bar.
Going to the Plaza in Midtown on Opelika Road. A very, very cool spot. That you should check out if you're looking to do something on Friday. I expect a big tailgating weekend.
Oh, I would expect so.
I know folks who weren't in town this past weekend that are planning on making the trip mm-hmm. into town this weekend.
That was a
Cal
really
game.
Good crowd. Excellent crowd. I think a lot of folks might not have been able to make it, but found other folks that could use their tickets this past week. And I think there were a lot of people that don't normally get to go to Auburn games that were there for the Alabama A&M game. And I think there will be a big, lively, excited crowd there Saturday for Cal.
And Hugh Freeze mentioned it in his press conference, but at the beginning of the fourth quarter to see in a game that was, you know, in the Auburn
it was, what was it?
66.
It was, yeah, I mean, 66-3.
In a 66-3 football game, like that student section was full, you know, very, very late in the second
pulling
half.
Pulling for 80.
Trying to see history. And they saw, you know, a couple of things that were among the best performances in not just recent Auburn history, but when you talk about, I mean, it's a short list of games where Auburn has broken the 70 mark. In its history. And yeah, I think Hugh Freeze, you know, like he said Saturday night, you know, you hope they're all like that one because Auburn, a lot of a lot of what you were hoping to see delivered as much as it could in the first game of the season.
All right, we'll get to our first break. Love for you to join in here on the Monday Drive. The regular ways, you can give us a call on the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box. That's presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air rallies for you, no matter the price.
106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 20 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Monday afternoon. Bill and Dan, joined by Brian Matthews, our regular Monday co-host here on The Drive. We'd love for you to join in. Give us your thoughts. What did you think about the ball game? I have not watched the TV broadcast. That's something I thought I might do tonight, because I've got a feeling that I'm not going to be enthralled with the Florida State-Boston College
totally
game.
Totally forgot that Bill O'Brien was the new head coach.
Yeah,
maybe BC can give him a run here.
Well, I will pay attention, but in between, I want to watch the broadcast because it's a whole lot different. Hey, I'll get to see what it looked like from the side instead of, you know, from our vantage point.
One thing I like mentioning whenever we talk about Boston College is that they are the only New Balance school in Division I athletics. They're the lone school with the New Balance deal. Like Auburn has the upcoming Nike deal, currently Under Armour, the athletic apparel provider. So Boston College has, you know, they go with New Balance, and I guess anything New Balance doesn't make in house, they fund Boston College's ability to go get it from other brands. New Balance just signed a deal with the Duke freshman, the Flag, the one who's the number one overall pick. And I guess part of it has to do with the fact, and I didn't know this, New Balance is based in Maine, and it's like a northeastern company, and that's where Cooper Flag is from. And it's also, you know, Boston College being nearby, one of the closer schools playing Division I, you know, bowl subdivision football. It makes a little bit of sense that they're keeping it kind of regional, reminiscent of Auburn's old deal with Russell Athletic.
Was just up the road in Alex City.
And I don't know how many other schools Russell Athletic sponsored, you know, when they had an Auburn deal. I know they were heavily involved, but they, you know,
Russell had a few.
Towards the end, you know, Auburn was one of the last ones. And it's so anyways, yeah, be on the lookout for New Balance gear tonight from the Boston College players. Just a backs against the wall situation for Florida State.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They lose here and the season will feel like it's over.
It's going to feel like it used to when we were wondering about the future of the Florida State coach, right? You go 0-2 to start the year, and you look lifeless at the quarterback position, and you're suddenly back to, you know, and it's crazy to think that, right? Because they were, you know, before Jordan Travis gets hurt, they were one of the top three or four teams in the country last year, unbeaten.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, to, you know, the fortunes have turned. They can right the ship. They can throttle Boston College tonight and still be right in the thick of things in the ACC. But boy, if you lose tonight, you know, that ship is taken on water.
Mm-hmm. No question about it. Yeah, we'd love your thoughts on any of the games that have gone on over the weekend. Been a fun weekend. I mean, we've had some – it's not the greatest weekend for the Southeastern Conference with Texas A&M, Florida, LSU losing.
The A&M and LSU losses were, at the very least, games that were highly competitive into the fourth quarter.
Were.
I think A&M can think, you know, A&M had a lot of momentum in the second half and let that one slip away. If a couple plays go their way, maybe it's a different story. Kudos to Notre Dame for the way they were able to they were able to face down multiple gotta have it third downs.
Not a great game for Connor Wigman.
No.
I mean, a lot of people were like, oh, he's going to step up and be great. On the other hand, you can't say that even though Brian Kelly may not have wanted to mention his quarterback's name, his quarterback played pretty well.
Oh, not, you know, Nussmeier doesn't
Jared
appear
Nussmeier
to be.
Had, but, I mean, Kelly was hot at him and everybody after that loss. Brian Kelly – Maybe you ought to schedule a little less challenging opening game.
Yeah, or maybe just relax a little bit.
I understand that it's probably frustrating to be answering like questions about similar losses.
To make it sound like you're throwing your quarterback under the bus.
Yeah, I didn't like some of that, but I mean I think that, you know, the clip getting all the play is him slamming his fist down. I mean, ESPN.com, the headline is Kelly slams fist on table during press conference or things like that. That's a show of, and I mean, look, you don't want it to get into abusive territory or anything like that, but I think that's a show of fairly genuine emotion from Brian Kelly there about
Friday. It's a tough loss. It was one where I thought they were going to come back and win it and thought they had it.
And it's not the first time.
It's their defense more than their offense. Again, but their defense appeared a little better than a year ago, but USC's defense appears a lot better.
And it's not the first time Brian Kelly is answering questions about a game where it feels like LSU had a lot of momentum in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
And it slips away. And I thought that was certainly the case.
Last year, the opening game was sort of similar.
No, I think there are multiple losses in the Kelly tenure. And again, he's also had big wins. You know, don't minimize that. But yeah, multiple losses in the Kelly tenure where it felt like LSU was a drive away or. It's like I've been watching a lot of tennis lately, and it's like you're either if you can hold serve or if you can break them one time, like you can win this thing. Mm-hmm. And LSU was, you know, LSU's had multiple losses.
LSU was a stop away. I mean, that's one of those where just one stop.
Yeah.
But they could not get it. And
SC's quarterback played pretty well.
Really,
I think
well.
I think Moss looks like somebody who can. I mean, a couple times, very tight windows where it was, and there's heat on him,
and a couple of fantastic catches.
I mean, don't want to give the quarterback all the credit because you know he had guys making real plays.
That's what it takes
on the ball.
That's what it takes. I mean, for a quarterback, usually when a quarterback puts up unbelievable numbers, there's going to be a catch or two in there that a receiver makes, and there were a few in that ball game. So yeah, that was a fun ball game to watch. Not so much fun if you were a Gator fan or an SEC fan watching Miami and Florida.
Yeah, if we're going to talk about coaches, it'd be Billy Napier.
I mean, man, I missed so many games last week. That's probably as bad as I missed one because Miami just, I mean.
They're all coin flips week one.
We said that.
The picking games week one is such a coin flip. These teams are different. And we're going on very little.
My coin did not flip very well.
I thought Miami was going to have a hard time with the atmosphere in Gainesville and some of the returning impact players for Florida. And instead, what appears clear, and this is one where longtime observers of the SEC would just be shocked to think like Florida appears to be near the bottom of the league in skill position. Talent,
skill position.
Not the only problem.
Yeah, they. I mean, they've got some talent.
But when you're talking about receivers and tight ends and running backs, I feel like very few teams in the SEC would trade with Florida right now, and that's never been the case, right? You think about
even when Florida wasn't very good, they'd have great skill players.
Yeah, and this is just a team seemingly, I don't want to say devoid of it, but one of the problems is
no, Vandy's skill players looked a lot better than Florida's.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I mean, it's a couple.
Diego Pavia is a gamer.
Yeah, a couple. I mean, there are a couple schools where I have, you know, I came out of week one. You don't want to take anything out of proportion. Florida is in real trouble, seemingly.
Yes, I think
South Carolina is in some trouble.
South Carolina they struggled.
I mean, you didn't get a real glimpse of Kentucky because of the weather conditions there and the multiple stops in the game, and you know they only played like a half before it got called for lightning. But I would think South Carolina just really struggled to get any consistent thing going in their offense. The quarterback who beat out Robbie Ashford appears to have some accuracy issues.
Lenore Sellers.
Yeah, Sellers. Yeah. I mean, made some good plays down the stretch to help them ultimately get the win. But I mean, Old Dominion is, that's a pretty good Sun Belt team that you're going down to the wire with on opening day, and now you jump right into conference play because South Carolina Kentucky is the 2:30. That's on during Auburn Cal. That's the game on ABC.
Oh yeah,
South Carolina Kentucky. So you know they're jumping a couple SEC teams jumping right into SEC play after week one. And I would think Shane Beamer is under some pressure to deliver a better performance. Mm-hmm. Because you know what? You won, but you don't get credit for winning when your team has to hold on at the very end and pick. I mean, it's like Auburn beating Georgia State a couple of years ago. Like, yeah, yes, there's a celebratory.
Better than a loss.
It's better than a loss, but it's not something that eases the indigestion among some of the fans about what they just saw. So I would think South Carolina is also on the list of, yeah, they won. They're 1-0, but that's not a settled situation by any stretch.
Though,
Vandy did look pretty good.
I don't know what to expect from Virginia Tech. This is not your old Virginia Tech, but it doesn't look like your old Vandy either.
No, I mean, and that's a quarterback Auburn fans saw last year at New Mexico State.
Yep. Way too much of him.
And he looked good.
He did.
No, he looked ready for prime time for sure. He looked like someone who can step into the conference.
He is a gutsy
gamer.
Yep. Really, I mean, he's gonna, you know, if there's a play, he's gonna try to figure out how to make it. May not always be the prettiest you've ever seen, but he makes them.
Generally speaking, when Vanderbilt has a threat at quarterback too, in the last 20 years, like the few seasons where Vanderbilt football has been able to compete with most of the SEC teams on their schedule, it's been helped by a Jay Cutler or a Aaron Rodgers' little brother. Like, I mean, you had
Jordan.
Yeah, well, I know his name, but you know, you knew who I was talking about immediately. Yeah. So it's like when you have those kind of situations, like having a quarterback, and it would appear that Vandy's got somebody who can help them stay in some of these games.
Yeah, I think so. All right, so we'd love for you to join in. Any your thoughts on any of the ball games? We're going to break down the Auburn game more. I want to we'll talk about the play of some of the newcomers. So many newcomers we got to see in the game. We'll get into that. A lot of freshmen. As a matter of fact, I was just double checking because I keep up with participation during the ball game, and I wanted to double check and make sure. But I believe it's the case that only either 5 or 6 scholarship players did not play for Auburn on Saturday. So I mean, that gives you an idea. That's exactly what they wanted, an opportunity to play everybody. We'll get to Jerry before we get to our bottom of the hour break here on The Drive. Hey, Jerry, how you doing?
Hey, guys. I just want to hear some recruiting news from Brian and maybe some results from the high school games.
Yeah, well, they had some terrific official visitors. Or no, not official, but unofficial visitors in this weekend. Deuce Knight was here. He is the number 2 dual threat quarterback in the country. From Mississippi, committed to Notre Dame. I think he's very, very close to flipping to Auburn. I think Auburn's in great shape there. I think he had a great trip to Auburn. And
I think it's just a matter of when.
When, right. Naheem Offord was down with his family for the game. I also think he had a really good visit, and things went well.
I think Ohio State people are getting a little bothered by Auburn.
Yep, and he's a 5-star, one of the top players.
He's the top player in the state of Alabama.
Yep.
One of the top defensive backs in the country.
And he's a guy that you may plug and play as a true freshman starter, potentially, in the SEC.
He was asking about local results, too. I know Lee Scott got the win.
Auburn High ended up winning big.
Yeah, but that's, Auburn High Friday night. It's Opelika week, isn't it? Auburn Opelika week. So, I mean, this should be a can't-miss broadcast on Friday night. On
and
weeks 94-3.
Two more key players that were here. It's kind of like 3-4.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Elijah Melendez.
Yeah, you mentioned him a while ago. That's a big linebacker from Florida that was committed to Miami.
He is
until he came in this weekend. Decommitted, I guess,
right
just before he came in.
He is a superstar. Just got a great size, speed combination, can cover a lot of ground, plays really, really physical. You look at him as a guy that DJ Durkin would take and then put immediately into his defense. He was here. I think Auburn's in really good shape for him. Mm-hmm. And then maybe the one that Auburn's not as quite as good a shape, but certainly definitely in the running and maybe the team to beat at the moment is running back Usman Cromaw. He was here again. He's been to Auburn many times. Auburn, Florida State, Georgia, probably the main 3 teams for him. Probably going to visit Georgia here coming up soon. Probably be back to Auburn at some point. maybe a final decision here within the next month or so.
But, yes, nothing but good news, Jerry, I would say, from recruiting over the weekend at Auburn. And no commits yet, right. But that don't be concerned with that.
I crunched the numbers. If Auburn gets those first three, Melendez offered tonight, they're going to be pushing for top two in the country.
Yes. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
The results are in, and Game Day Men's Health in Auburn has delivered.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Happy Labor Day, everybody. Bill and Dan, joined by Brian Matthews of AuburnSports.com here on the Monday edition. And
So I looking at your point you made right before we went to Jerry, talking about the freshman participation.
Yeah, that's what I wanted, Bill, to get in. Some of the first year guys.
I think some of the more, let's talk about the starting lineup a little bit, because I think some of the and you get into
Hugh Freeze is going to be upset with you.
I know. I don't want to get on Hugh's.
He jumped all over that when it was brought up that Malcolm Simmons started.
Yeah.
He was out there for the first snap, and Hugh said it's because there was a play they wanted to run, and Malcolm did indeed have the first pass reception of the season.
He had no appetite in singling out Bobby Jamison Travis either. When I asked him that question, he talked about the importance of the rotation on the defensive line.
The fact that Isaiah Rakes didn't play probably played a little bit into that.
Impacted that.
But Jamison Travis played a lot.
He did. And looked good to me. And I thought Malik Blockton up front really moved well. I'm excited for his future. He reminds me so much of his older brother, just the way he plays. Mm-hmm. Just relentless.
I'll tell you who else you saw an awful lot of was number 10. Amaris Williams was out there a lot.
Yeah. And I thought he looked a little tentative at times, but you can just see.
The game went on, you could see him going, I got this.
Take a look at number 10 in about three or four more weeks.
A couple of the, I wouldn't say surprises, but if you thought, they played a little bit more than we were expecting, or I thought looked better than we may have been expecting. Some guys on defense that would come to mind for me. Jamison Travis getting the start, I thought was really impressive. Blockton getting in as early. Those are also.
I think Blockton started, didn't he?
I think it was Jamison Travis and Bleedy, but then Blockton went in almost immediately. I believe Jamison Travis and Blockton of the defensive linemen who played, they're of the interior guys. Those are like the two who played a lot who have eligibility remaining next season. Right. Pretty much every other option Auburn has is a senior. So Jamison Travis and Blockton playing, keep in mind, those are two guys that could be anchors of the Auburn defensive line next year if they get a lot of playing time this year. Not to mention whatever Auburn gets, because I don't want to start talking about next year after one game.
Yeah, we got to see more of T.J. Lindsey because Auburn had a big lead. But, he was – your first six were playing – just rotating.
Yeah, minus constantly. Isaiah Wright.
I'm not super qualified to identify who played well at these positions, but I thought Sylvester Smith was running around making plays. I thought we saw a lot of 19 back there at safety getting involved. And he played a lot early.
He got to play a good bit. A good bit.
We saw a Smith and Harris, right?
Caleb Harris making some plays.
And I know that people were like, it's really a shame for the local guy. Hugh Freeze really, likes what he saw from J.C. Hart.
Yep.
J.C. felt like he had an interception.
Yeah,
he just mistimed that. But then Hugh really talked about how his ability to get over that, get up, and make the play after that, which ended up not allowing any points.
Yeah, hustle play.
J.C. played a lot, though.
He did.
He played a lot.
They're going to give those young, especially cornerbacks, a ton of playing time as much as they can early, because they know that they're going to need them in these big games, because, guys like Keontae can't return punts and play every snap on defense. Same with Kyan Lee every snap. So they've got to get these young guys ready to go. And
Keontae can return punts, though.
Oh, boy.
Man. No, that is – I don't
yes,
know.
Yes, he can. And
he's going to keep doing it.
A lot of people are like, you just can't do that. Hugh Freeze today said –
Yes, you can. I'm not sure I feel great about it, but I understand
it. Hugh's an offensive guy. Hugh wants to score points, and he feels like – Keontae, when he gets the ball in his hands, gives you a chance to score points.
Yep. It's an interesting argument because think about Devin Hester, right? Devin Hester just went in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Devin Hester was never really in his NFL career or in his college career in Miami. Devin Hester was never really relied on as a shutdown defensive back. Most of his contributions were in the punt return and kick return games. And you wonder if he had been a team's number one corner, would they have been less, even though he's the greatest kick returner?
Are you sure that Keontae is number one corner?
No, that's what I mean. But I think in the case of, well, even if Devin Hester had been, I mean, NFL teams didn't really ask him to be one of their top two corners. Like, he wasn't a starter at corner. Most of his contributions, and you wonder if he had been, if he was a really, really important part of the defense, even if he's the greatest kick returner ever, would you limit that aspect of his game because you need him at the corner spot?
The greatest ever? I probably not.
No, I wonder at what point, and then where's the balance, right? At what point does a kick returner's contributions become so valuable that you think, okay, well, even though he's a starter on defense, we need him. I think Keontae's there, where he's valuable enough as a punt returner that
I agree.
Like, that's where
I think that Hugh Freeze, I don't know about Tanner Burns, I don't know about Crime Dog, I'm not sure how everybody else feels about it, but I think Hugh Freeze feels like he is so valuable as a punt returner that we've got to keep him there, and that's another reason why they're really relying on some young guys to step up and not have Keontae playing every single snap on defense.
What was the deal with Champ Anthony? Did he exit the game?
Yeah,
did he exit the game early and didn't come back? Was that there was a question about it at the press conference.
I got the feeling that he'd just been nursing this injury. They're being careful with him.
Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah. Well, he looked like he was coming up a little lame. But Hugh Freeze said he's been nursing a calf injury, so there wasn't any reason when it bothered him a little bit. There wasn't any reason to put him back in.
30 was out there a ton, right? Wasn't that's Robinson, the newly arrived.
Yes, Jaquez Robinson played a lot.
Robinson played a lot, which I think is also something.
And he's very familiar with Charles Kelly.
Former Kelly player, the Colorado transfer. And I would also think he's somebody that, because he arrived so late, they're thinking getting him on the field and getting him reps is a beneficial. Not that you want. You know, you want Champ Anthony at 100% too for this defense, but getting Jaquez Robinson snaps and getting him reps is probably because he's probably your next guy up if something happens to Champ, and I think he's probably going to play some just because they want to be able to rely on a guy, you know, a veteran guy like that.
Guy who played at least as much as Jaquez Robinson, another freshman there on defense, is 16, DeMarcus Riddick.
Yes.
I would like to go off topic for just a moment.
Sure.
And give a shout out, so to speak, to Karen Hoppe and the Auburn soccer team.
Yes.
They're on a roll.
Beat South Alabama 6-0, beat Appalachian State 3-0. They're 5-0 in the season, outscored their opponents 22-0 in five games. So that's really impressive.
Did I see that last year it took 18 games for them to score 22 goals?
Yeah, it's wild.
The victories over the Sun Belt.
I mean, the defense, you know, has been there, but they've really got the offense.
They really do. Yeah. Goalkeeper Matty Prohaska, that's how you say it.
That's right.
Me if it's not.
Prohaska.
Defensive player of the week for the second time already this season. So, terrific start.
The victories over the Sun Belt teams have been impressive because that is a league that has made noise in the soccer postseason before, and it's you know, competitive stuff. But I still think the most impressive thing is the way they served the way they served notice in the opener against Clemson, beating a team
4-0.
Yeah, beating a team that made it to the national semifinals last year and opened the season in the top five in most preseason polls in NCAA soccer, and beating them like that. Yeah, I mean, it's a team that seemingly is going to be is ready for primetime.
Dabo taking all the L's this fall, right?
Yeah, they'd be glad to go ahead and just give that one to him.
I wonder if they refuse to go into the transfer portal.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to overreact to that one because Bo Nix's team looked pretty bad against Georgia a couple years ago, and they were still in the playoff hunt all season long. I think Georgia has the ability to do that to people, but Clemson does not look to have fixed the offensive problems that were an issue in their toughest losses last year.
That Clemson team doesn't look like, I mean, it doesn't look like the Clemson teams of 4 and 5 years ago when they were as talented as anybody in the country. They've got some talent, but they just don't have guys that you just go, wow.
I'll tell you, the game I can't wait to see, speaking of the ACC, the game I can't wait to see Saturday is when we get Nico for Tennessee against our old buddy Grayson McCall. former Coastal Carolina quarterback, now at NC State. That's
Tennessee,
an NC
Tennessee will beat the.
You think so? You think Tennessee? You think Tennessee's going all over NC State?
I do too.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, what
NC
do I know?
State
I
was, didn't
I
look so hot wrong. In their opener.
No, yeah. You're right. I was so wrong on so many games. Hey, one more player that I wanted to mention. Now he's not. We're talking about newcomers. Well, this is a guy you may not have seen as much. I was really, really impressed with what we saw from Robert Woodyard.
Yeah,
he's a guy that's been in the program for a while.
Right.
Man, he was flying all over the field.
Well, I think that one of the most impressive things about him is he's a guy that you haven't seen anything of for 2 years.
Right. He was hurt.
Right. And a lot of times those players end up, you know, leaving or you never hear from him again. But he stuck it out, got over his injuries, got in shape.
He's going to play. He's going to help this year now. And
he
and
looked fast some, and quick.
Gives, yeah, gives Auburn physical. Somebody that they feel like, hey, there's somebody else that they've got for next year as well.
He definitely caught my eye, too. Really impressive.
334-321-1390. We need to get to our final break of the hour. John, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Monday Drive.
Brady here with University Ace Hardware. Football season's here, and what better way to experience game day with your friends and family?
Free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final segment of hour number one here on this Labor Day, and let's get to The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Had two questions. Kind of hard for me to draw conclusions from Alabama A&M, but just wanted y'all's thoughts on two players. First, Rivaldo Fairweather. It looked like to me he was a better blocker or more involved blocking, run blocking than he was last year. And it seemed like the tight end room was a little shorter against Alabama A&M. I didn't feel like I saw Luke Beal as much as I did last year. And then the other question was on the other side of the ball. It just seemed like a lot of players were coming in from different angles and all that. And just had a question, do you expect Eugene Asante to be as noticeable in this defense as he was last year?
Oh, those are great questions. I would say Fairweather worked all offseason on his blocking, and I think it showed. I know he had one or two
at
drops.
At least one drop, yeah.
Yeah, and that happens sometimes.
Right.
But it wasn't his best game receiving. But with so much focus on Auburn's receivers, there is going to be several games this year where he makes big, big plays. He's going to be one-on-one with safeties and linebackers. That's going to be a mismatch, and they're going to exploit
that. That's coming.
That.
Yeah, that's absolutely coming. I would say one of the reasons you didn't see maybe as much of Luke is the how Brandon Frazier has really come on.
Yep. And they've talked about –
Brandon's a great receiver. I mean, he and Rivaldo are the best receivers. Yeah. Among the tight ends. Yep.
Luke also spent fall camp as an expectant father.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, Luke's had a lot going on these last couple of months.
You'll still see plenty of 86.
Yeah, and you did.
And I mean, you saw a good bit of 84 the other day, which was nice to see.
I think there's also a belief that Luke Deal is somebody they feel like they know what they have. And so maybe a game like Alabama A&M is where you showcase.
Again.
Yeah, he voted captain. And you showcase, that's where I could see why Frazier could use those reps. There are also maybe fewer reps available for the tight ends in general because of how many.
Because you've got receivers. Because, you have true receivers now. Do.
And he mentioned Eugene Asante. And I think he's correct in that we're not going to see as much of Eugene this year as we did last year because we don't have to.
But
right? In the big games, in the big moments.
I think this defense, again, DJ Durkin, is – wants his, it's setting it up for his linebackers to be able to make a lot of plays.
Yep.
So yes, I think the opportunities will be there. Yeah, Eugene hopefully won't have to play as many snaps, but I think that, yes, linebackers are going to be a big part, and Eugene a big part of this defense.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn's got three games at least, probably, where Eugene maybe not have to play as much. But when you get to Arkansas and when you get to Oklahoma, when you're in key parts of those games and key drives, then you have your best players out there to make those big plays. So, and then you got a guy like DeMarcus Riddick, who may be pound for pound the most talented player on the defense, maybe. There's several guys you can argue that.
That's interesting. I don't know. Keldrick
maybe.
And
yeah,
Morris,
oh, yeah, I know.
Some
there's
some.
There's
have something
right,
to say about
he,
that.
Let's just say he's in the discussion.
Yeah, you're right.
And he's only going to get better as he gets more experience, more playing time, playing special teams, rotating in at linebacker. So there's just a lot more help, a lot more depth there at that linebacker position.
Thanks, y'all.
Appreciate the call, John. We are coming up on our top of the hour break.
Seemed like they were willing to. We did see some snaps with Kieron and McLeod on the field together.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Jalen drifting inside too on some of his pass.
Notice,
yeah, you saw, yeah,
a willingness to use one as a spy or drop them both back in coverage.
How they drop into coverage, right? Saw both McLeod and
showing
and
a lot of different things.
I don't think
they didn't show a lot of stunts and blitzes and things like that,
right?
Which DJ's got,
but I think they recognize that McLeod and Kieron are more dangerous as three-dimensional defensive players,
right,
not just pass rushers that can be predicted, you know, by the defense, but something else. And they're both athletic enough to do all of those things. Just a matter of getting them game reps.
Yeah, like what we saw out of Kieron, I thought as well. But as Hugh Freeze said, you know, got to collapse the pocket a little bit more. All right, we will get to our top of the hour break. Love for you to join in. We're halfway done here on the Monday Drive.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Happy Labor Day, everybody. Bill and Dan, joined by Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. Drew a little under the weather, so Dan is at the controls today. We'd love for you to join in. Give us your thoughts on anything that has gone on in the world of sports since we last spoke to you on Friday. A big weekend of college football, which will wrap up officially tonight with Florida State and Boston College. We talked about it a little earlier. This is pretty close to a must-win for Florida State.
Oh, certainly. At home, coming back from a shocking loss in Dublin to Georgia Tech, playing a second straight ACC game to start the year.
Opening up the season with back-to-back conference games.
Yeah, with back-to-back conference games, and you're playing a Boston College team. I believe Boston College had week zero off, right? The season opener for BC. And so this is a dangerous spot for Florida State. They're a 21-point favorite at home tonight. I think there's the belief that they're considerably better than Boston College
at
too many spots.
They should be more talented, but here we go. We'll see how Bill O'Brien and BC with that week of watching and scouting Florida State, they have that advantage. That's
the longer that game is close, the more uncomfortable the Florida State sideline is.
You're not kidding.
Like and not just the sideline, the city of Tallahassee,
the Florida State fan base.
Yeah, whole thing. Like the longer that game is close, if Florida State can go out there and get a couple, and I think it's imperative. We talked about this a couple times last year with Peyton Thorne. Like sometimes you have a quarterback who needs to see some shots go in. Like that quarterback needs to be able to see a couple of big plays early from the offense for his own sake as Hugh Freeze said today. There's no replacement for confidence. Like that's
right.
Like with Uiagalelei today. Tonight. He needs to hit a couple of shots early, because the longer that Florida State pass game sputters, if it's a struggle, if they're playing 10 yards and in, I feel like Boston College could have a chance to keep that game close. If Florida State can hit some big plays and turn it into a track meet, Boston College should be they should be on the bus by the third quarter.
You mentioned Hugh Freeze and Brian. We were all there today.
Yeah, we were.
Hugh Freeze, still, I mean, even after looking at the film, he's pretty pleased. I mean, he likes big plays. Who doesn't? I mean, you know, for your team to be making big plays, but they weren't there last year. Mm-hmm. And granted, I mean, Auburn's not going to be playing, you know, the Alabama A&M defense every week. But they're going to be taking some shots, and when they get them, they expect to be able to convert.
If they're in one-on-one coverage on the outside now, or even in the inside, they're not afraid to take shots. They're going to make plays as receivers they have against good cornerbacks. You know, they've still got to take steps forward and be tested. And it'll be one thing going against Alabama State. It'll be another thing going against California and Arkansas and Oklahoma at home. It'll be quite another thing going to Athens,
absolutely,
week five and going against NFL cornerbacks. But they've got steps, you know, they got time to get to that point. But it was hard for him to be too picky with Peyton Thorne. He mentioned that his biggest issue, and of course, I guess he was caught on the sidelines giving Peyton a hard time. He mentioned that Peyton takes hard coaching well. He's the son of a coach, of course. But it was his protections, right?
Well, you see it on the touchdown. Was it the second one to Keandre Lambert-Smith?
Yeah.
That was so wide open. I mean, he floated it out there. But what he was upset about is he didn't change the protection, and he got and a guy got a shot at him from the backside after the ball was already out, and everybody was watching Dre just sort of jog into the end zone for the touchdown. And Hugh Freeze's point is, make that call, get the correction, don't get hit. Right. He doesn't want his quarterback getting hit.
Because if that's an SEC defensive end, he's there a step faster.
Break his back.
Right, and the coverage is a lot tighter. Right. So that was what Hugh Freeze was, I think, most upset about during the game. He said upon further review, he thought the defense played better than he first thought as far as he was concerned, I think, about the pressure.
One more thing about Peyton Thorne, though, because I think Hugh Freeze also made the point of, like, there were times, not a lot of them in the game, but there were times where he was getting on Peyton because those are plays Peyton usually makes. Those are calls Peyton usually makes. Right. You know, when he said, these are things where Peyton's 19 out of 20, you know, most times getting it right. So when he gets it wrong in the game.
Peyton, I think on this one, Peyton was so excited. He saw what it was, knew it was going to be a touchdown, and didn't go ahead after that and make the correction to have the back stay in and cover his backside. Because if he has the back just chip on that guy, then he's celebrating too and not taking a shot in the back.
Peyton Thorne probably enjoyed being able to go downfield a little bit more.
Oh, I mean,
this was Peyton's first 300-yard game as Auburn's quarterback. Mm-hmm. The fifth or sixth.
Yeah, 322 in the first half,
which is
all he played.
Fifth or sixth career 300-yard game, if you include his time at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. I think there's the hope that it's not his last 300-yard game as Auburn's quarterback. There was just that was missing.
How many
Auburn games last year?
10 different receivers, 10 different players caught passes. Not receivers, but I think there were
– I
mean,
that's right.
The ball got spread around to quite a few.
It was
few.
10.
That's
very nearly the Caleb Burton touchdown. I mean, you almost have, right? I mean, he's tracked down.
Oh, yeah. Caleb probably hurt a little bit after that because he didn't need to be looking back left and right.
No.
Just look to the goal line and see if you can get there.
He got caught looking behind him, and the guy chased him down. I think even Jason Campbell on the radio broadcast was sort of going back to his old time. Oh, you can't be looking backwards as a receiver on plays like that. But there's been more talk about the seven new receivers than the two holdovers, Camden and Caleb. Camden was in the game early, and Caleb Burton made that play to showcase that he's still got a role too.
Hey, what's nice is Auburn's got five receivers that caught multiple passes, averaging more than 20 yards a catch. As you said, Peyton 322 yards on 13 completions.
Yeah.
So averaging almost 25 yards a completion. And that's that tells you, you're pushing it downfield, which is something they're doing. And I've heard some other talk about, Auburn's game plan was just to come in and they're going to throw. Well, I don't know that necessarily was the case. I think it was more of, hey, if they're giving you one-on-one coverage, we're going to throw it.
See, I think the game plan for Alabama A&M was, if we're going to lose this game resoundingly, we're going to do it because Auburn made big plays in the passing game.
Yeah.
A&M did not want to go out there and say, we're going to lose because Auburn was able to
get it. Because they just lined up, handed it off, and ran for 500 yards.
Yeah, because Jarquez got 20 yards of carry going up the middle because we were so worried about playing an overly conservative. But no, like make Auburn beat you. If you had to choose between the run game and the passing game beating you, based on what you saw last year, you said, yeah, let's see if the run game. Now, Auburn was able to win one-on-ones with wide receivers, and Auburn was able
to still average 10 yards a rush.
And they were able to create big plays in the passing game. But I think a lot of it had to do with how Alabama A&M
take what they give you. And Alabama A&M was like saying, all right, here, we'll see what you can do throwing the ball over the top. And Auburn said, thank you very much.
And there were times last year when teams that didn't have Auburn's Auburn's level of talent were able to...
They dare Auburn to do that, and Auburn couldn't a year ago.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... That
over
is,
and over and over again.
Yes, absolutely.
And you can go back to the bowl game, which is maybe the worst or best example, right?
I mean, think New Mexico State's a pretty good example.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I think New Mexico State's probably a pretty good example of that, too.
But, I mean, if you have any semblance of coverage from your cornerbacks or DBs last year and you can stack the box against Auburn, it's a good chance you're going to really, really slow down their offense.
Sure. Now we will see. I mean, again, the competition level, as you said, Brian, I mean, it's really going to step up. Cal, you know, really did a good job last year. I mean, Auburn struggled against them, and I loved Hugh Freeze saying, hey, you know, this is the chance to show the difference from last year to this year offensively.
It really is. Auburn, I wrote it today, but it was 240 yards, I think, of total offense a year ago. Had to score late to win. I think it was 14-10. You know, put together that last drive. I remember Rivaldo Fairweather making some big plays, caught the touchdown pass. So, yes. And you, Freeze, mentioned it. Cal had the same game plan defensively. Take away the run, challenge Auburn's receivers. Auburn couldn't really answer that challenge, at least consistently. I think Peyton throwing through under 100 yards in that game, maybe, or under 150 yards for sure.
Yeah, it was I think that one was over 100, but
it was one of those typical struggles, right, offensively for Auburn that they had last year. This year it's a different game plan for Auburn, and they feel more confident, so we'll see if they can get it going again.
Hey, we'd love for you to join in here in hour number two of the drive, second hour of the show, brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can do so by calling the drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Rate, review, subscribe if you consume the podcast. That way it helps us out.
All right, Brian, we've talked a good bit about we talked more about the newcomers on defense than we did offense.
We did.
After watching the game Saturday, and we've watched a good bit of practice throughout this fall, who do you feel like right now has a chance to be Auburn's leading receiver? I think there are multiple candidates.
There really are. Because of the rotation at slot, I'm going to go outside and say probably Keandre Lambert-Smith will probably be the leading receiver. But I think Cam Coleman has a chance to be the big play receiver and lead the team in touchdowns maybe and total yards, with Keandre maybe catching the most passes. That's kind of the way I see it. And Perry and Malcolm, of course, are going to have big seasons too.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are quite a few guys. I mean, so many of them, they all got in on the action just about. I mean, I got to look back at the scoring. Who didn't get to score?
At receiver?
Yeah.
Lewis, Caleb Burton, right? Didn't score.
Well,
right?
Caleb didn't. He should have. Dre had two.
Sam Jackson
Malcolm
intercepted.
Had one.
Sam Jackson had the touchdown. That was intended for Kane, wasn't it?
Sam looked like he picked off a reception. You know, you hear like picked off interception. He did a great job of following the ball, and it was just sort of up there for grabs. And he was the guy that sort of came running in, leapt up, and made the catch. Sam got one.
Yeah, it was a 50-50 ball intended for like two other people.
Yeah,
and Sam Jackson came over. Yeah, it was like watching a bird like swoop out. And
I mean, he came soaring. He really did.
Like you're feeding one bird, and another bird comes flying
swoops
in. Yeah, just swoops
and took away the food.
Takes it away.
Take the worm or something away.
That's right. That's how Sam was doing it. And yeah, he looked real impressive on that play. But that's I don't think
Robert Lewis only with one catch on Saturday. I think you're going to see
a lot more of him.
How much did Camden Brown play? Because that would
Camden
be.
I thought he played a good bit. He just wasn't targeted. Boy, he blocked.
Yeah,
he blocked really well. I noticed a couple of times he was downfield burying a couple of defensive backs. So, and that's something that's going to keep him getting playing time. Yeah. And we've heard about him coming on, but I don't think he was targeted any time. But I think he played a lot of snaps. So we'd love your thoughts on what you saw of the game Saturday. Your thoughts on now what to expect this week. Again, game one, the competition, it's going to be a lot different.
An interesting point during the during the commercial break about the Auburn passing, the Auburn pass rush, and you know, I wonder if there was a desire to maybe with the A&M quarterback specifically, there was a desire by Auburn. I mean, yes, you wanted to get sacks, and yes, you wanted to disrupt, but I wonder if they wanted him, knowing his ability to scramble, if they wanted to force him into situations where he would have to throw downfield into traffic or throw, you know, off balance.
Well,
and throw it like it was you can disrupt a passing game even if you don't get to the quarterback.
Right.
And I think Auburn did that a couple of times, and I wonder how much that was by design.
That, and I also wonder if they didn't want to just see, all right, let's see what our young secondary with these young defenders look like, because they're going to have some big challenges coming down the stretch, and a lot of first year and first time guys out there in the back seven, especially in the secondary, and I think they wanted to get a look at them. You mentioned a while ago, I mean, we saw the Bucks dropping into pass coverage a good bit.
Not Tampa Bay.
Yes, the Bucks.
That's right, yeah. Not Baker Mayfield.
It made it more
Mike
like
Evans.
They looked more like linebackers than just edge rushers, like Brian was saying a while ago.
Well, it makes it more difficult, I think, to game plan for a team with Jalen McLeod or Kieron Crawford. It makes it easier if you can point to them and say, all right, well, we know that guy's coming after the quarterback.
You don't have to worry about him except block, you know, be ready for him to come after the quarterback.
Yeah, instead, if you quickly try to get rid of the ball and you throw it to a spot where Jalen McLeod's not supposed to be or a spot where Kieron Crawford's not supposed to be, it can be a big play created without those guys rushing the passer. And they're also excellent pass rushers on top of that. Like, I think that's one aspect that, yeah, you wonder how much Auburn showcased to that on Saturday, how much of that they will showcase this coming Saturday. Cal, that spectacular running back, Ott, left the game with an injury.
Jaden?
Jaden Ott left the game with an injury.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
No comment from the Cal coaching staff about his status.
He's probably their best player on the team.
For Saturday, but that is a terrible situation for Cal. To be wondering about his status with Auburn on Saturday, because you figured he would be a huge part of Cal's game plan trying to win a game on the road.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see him listed just about everywhere, in one of the top 10 running backs in the country. So, that'll be very interesting to see how, you know, if they can get him ready to play this week. I mean, they've got an ACC schedule to be concerned with. They go to Florida State in a couple of weeks.
They play five games this year, Brian. Five.
Cal getting ready
That's
for that
crazy.
ACC schedule.
Cal plays five games east of Dallas, Texas this year. That's part of their part of their schedule, including the Auburn game. They finish at SMU, but it's five games in either Dallas
Dallas. It's sort of spread out. It's like they're going all the way across country, then they're back home, then they're going back across country. Because I know that in 2 weeks, 2 weeks they're in Tallahassee.
They're in Pitt at some point in October, November.
Where's the other one? Where's the other one?
Wake Forest, maybe. Wake. I think they're at Wake, but I mean,
and the last one is at least in Texas.
I mean, they might as well just keep their phone set on the Eastern time zone, right? They might don't even change it back. They're gonna spend so much time on this side of the country.
All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join in again. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline to get you through here on the Monday Drive.
Hey, this is Jacob Goins, voice of the Auburn High Tigers. Join us this Friday night as the Tigers
online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday edition of The Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And we'd love for you to join and give us your thoughts on the first full weekend of college football, which, of course, is not done yet because, as we said, Florida State and Boston College tonight coming up from down in Tallahassee. But we'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. Not just the Auburn game, but obviously we'd love your thoughts on that as well. Great crowd, as we were saying a while ago, I thought, for an opener against an Alabama A&M. And then the students stuck around for the entire game. Cal coming in Saturday. We mentioned it a little while ago. It's expected to not be nearly as hot. So, yes. I mean, fans are going to get a little bit of a break. Cal going to get a little bit of a break as far as the weather is concerned when they come in. And, you know, Hugh Freeze today was talking about
the high on Friday right now is 77.
Unbelievable. Now, there's it's supposed to rain,
there's
too.
There's some rain in the forecast as well. But, yeah, high on Friday right now for 77.
That is amazing.
Yeah, high on Saturday is creeping up, but still just 85.
We need some rain. My grass is getting crunchy walking on it, and it's not just all the leaves that are down. I mean, the trees are drying up so much that, I mean, any little breeze – and tons of leaves fall because, yeah, there's
in your pool, right?
Yeah, they do. They're really, that's no fun. Brian, I was going to say, I wanted to get your thoughts, tell everybody about this week's Monday Musings, sponsored by Uncle Keith's Red Sauce.
Yes, the delicious homegrown right here in the state of Alabama, Uncle Keith's Red Sauce, available at Publix, Piggly Wiggly's, and Renfro's. You can get it online with a 15% discount code, BMAT15. Give it a try. You will absolutely love it. And, you know, today in Monday Musings, I just talked about how, you know, when Auburn hired Hugh Freeze, you knew he was going to be a good recruiter, mm-hmm. and you knew he was going to bring a high-powered offense to Auburn.
But did even the most optimistic fans, I think, might have thought – well, we'll see if it takes a little while for him to get back into the swing of recruiting. My goodness.
Right. Didn't take any time for that to happen. In fact, as soon as he showed up, if you look back at those few weeks between he was hired and signing day, he flipped or signed a number of big-time players. Connor Lewis starting for Auburn right now. Kendrick Falk is starting for Auburn.
Kyne Lee starting for Auburn. Those three, are, bam, 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 yeah, right
all,
after he got here.
All conference-type players, in my opinion. So he started right away improving Auburn's talent base and is continuing to do that. And, you know, after a year of trying some things out that didn't work out, he went out and got his guys on offense, got Derek Nix as offensive coordinator, promoted Ken Austin into the quarterback coaching role, and now he's rolling with his offense, improved that wide receiver room, and you saw it really for the first time, I think, that explosive ability, 451 yards regardless of an opponent. Passing yards is nothing to discount. That's a big number, and that says something to me, especially in game one, about what this offense is going to look like this season and going forward. And then Monday Musings went back to early 80s, a song by a duo, the most successful duo of all, pop duo of all time. And one of their songs is also one of the most sampled songs in hip hop of all time.
Mm.
Any guesses?
Hall & Oates? No.
Yes.
Oh, is it Hall & Oates?
Yes, it is.
It's Hall & Oates? Okay. It was either going to be Hall & Oates or Wham.
Any guesses on the song?
Duo. Out of Touch?
Nope.
I Can't Go for That?
Boom, man.
All right, there we
good.
Go.
Good. You are really good. Yes, that's it. So, yep.
There's a Hall & Oates song that sounds exactly like the Stevie Wonder. They have the same beat. Is it Maneater and Part-Time Lover have the exact
identical?
I heard Part-Time Lover on 96.3.
I'd never thought about
recently,
that.
And maybe it's funny you mentioned Hall & Oates because I was gonna observe that to you, Bill, was that I'd heard.
You hear
both Hall & Oates and Stevie Wonder a lot on 96.3.
Oh yeah, you're absolutely right.
Michael Jackson used the bass line from I Can't Go for That for his song Billie Jean.
Yes.
So there's a tie-in right there, a direct one.
I don't know if Billy Ocean used it for Caribbean Queen, or if he just used enough of it not to get sued, right? Like
it is a fine line.
Because Caribbean Queen, I feel like is dancing on that. Did you borrow? I Can't Go for That, or did you? Or is it like a Ghostbusters? I Want a New Drug. Sort of situation, right, where it's like you used, mm-hmm. although they did get sued in that situation
and lost,
Huey is credited as a writer on Ghostbusters.
Do you know where they're from or where they met? Any ideas?
Hall & Oates.
Yes.
It's are they Philly?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
That's where they were in school.
At Temple. Yep.
Yeah.
Met at Temple.
Yeah, I remember. All right, way back, playing well before it was re-released and made it big. She's Gone.
Yes.
Was really popular. Was a popular college song. More AOR. What was the name of that album? It's like Abandoned Luncheonette, I believe.
Okay.
Was the album. Great album from Hall & Oates. Had no idea they would be pop stars a little later.
Sure. But, and I also remember,
yeah, it was like 3 or 4 years later, after they'd done Sarah Smile, they put out She's
Is,
Gone.
Is the You've Lost That Love and Feeling cover, at some point that gets in there too, right?
Oh, that's a little later.
That's later on. That's okay, later. Okay. I figured that was, I didn't know how early
they did a really
that was.
Good, the, really good cover of that.
The G.E. Smith was also he's on guitar for most of those Hall & Oates songs. And if you grew up watching old Saturday Night Live, or they were old to me, but if you grew up watching, if you've watched Saturday Night,
okay. I remember. Is it Mr. Hand?
If you go back to, because they're all on Peacock, but SNL in like 87 to the early 90s, they would go to commercial with.
Oh,
G.
I go back farther than that.
But G. E. Smith,
he'd always be playing the guitar.
It was G. E. Smith and the Saturday Night Live band, and that's G. E. Smith who I think had.
You probably. I don't know if you go Jane all the way Curtin. Back to Paul Schaefer.
I was going
to
say Paul Schaefer would have been like, Paul Schaefer would have been the NBC guy before that. Yeah.
Before jumping
to Letterman. But G.E. Smith with the often very visible in Hall & Oates videos. You know, he was there as a and huge part of the huge part of their success.
Yeah,
as well.
Some great stuff there. I look forward to that every week as the your Monday musings.
Thank you.
And again, sponsored by one of our favorites as well, Uncle Keith's Red Sauce.
And now is a great time to go stock up on it. It's tailgating season.
Yes,
it is the
right.
Perfect salsa to have out there before a game. During a game and after a game, right?
Mm-hmm. No question. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break just in time with that. Still plenty of time for you to join in. Love your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports as we head into the final half hour of the Monday Drive.
Jessica Samuel with Opelika Power Services. Opelika Power is committed to delivering the highest level of service and value to our customers. We are devoted to meeting the needs of our customers through safe, reliable, and affordable delivery of electricity to the home. We're proud to serve you. Please visit our website for more information about the benefits of public power. We thank you for your business. We're Opelika Power Services, hometown people working for you.
Welcome back into the drive, 25 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Monday, Labor Day. Bill, Dan, Brian, Matthews here in the studio. Drew should be back tomorrow.
Oh, Kevin
class is back in tomorrow.
Costner's not afraid of a long movie. Is
he? No, you're right about
going
that.
Going on.
No, he's not. Not at all. Good gracious. Yeah, we're just talking about some things to find. Like I said, I'm looking forward to. I'll check out Florida State BC tonight, but I want to watch the television version.
You want to see the Auburn
the
game?
Broadcast
the call, yeah.
of the Auburn Alabama A&M game. Just to watch some of the things that we saw. Sometimes they were going on so quick. Like I said, I'm keeping up with participation. I barely got the people who were in the game and touchdown. That's tough. I could get used to that.
We talked about it a little bit earlier, but I mean, J.C. Hart getting his first real action there. It seems like he's the first defensive backup after Kane and Keontae on the outside nearly got an interception.
Yeah,
and
he knew he had it. I think you could just feel it. You see it.
And you're right. I mean, the fact that, and that was something when the veteran defensive backs were talking about what JC's been doing better, they mentioned, you know, it's tough for young players to shrug off a mistake. It's tough to, and stay focused and stay, and move on from it and stay productive.
And that's one of the things, remember, that Crime was talking about having to do with Kay and Lee last year. It's like, you know, and it's going to happen. Yeah. Defensive backs are going to get burned sometimes. They're going to give up a play. And he said, you know, Cam would come in just, beating himself up about that and just having to, get them to just – forget that one and move on.
Yeah, overcoming the imposter syndrome and J.C. Hart, you know, getting on the field and making play doesn't go his way initially in the interception slips through his fingers and lands in the hands of the opponent, but he was able to chase that guy down, save the touchdown, and I think Auburn plans on deploying J.C. Hart more moving forward as a defensive back. That's a key. I mean, you hope Keontae and Kane can stay healthy because you know they're really productive players, but you're going to need guys after those two, and J.C. Hart looks to be the first one Auburn's going to use.
Yeah, it's going to be a couple of things. We mentioned Champ Anthony a little while ago. Isaiah Rakes did not play, a guy that was projected to be a starter, and somebody that Brian's gotten an awful lot of talk from all the defenders and the coaches on what a good fall camp he has had.
Yeah, big physical nose guard, can take up a lot of space, requires, you know, double teams a lot just to maintain him or just to hold your own against him. And Coach Freeze said he would be cleared to play this week and ready to go. So that just is one more guy in that rotation inside, and he'll rotate in there with Bobby Jamison Travis, Trill Carter, Jason Jones at nose guard, four deep there. And then at D tackle, you've got Gage Keys, you've got Philip Bleedie, who started, and you got Malik Blockton, who played a lot. Mm-hmm. So there's seven guys right there.
Yeah,
it was
a good six-man rotation a week ago.
Trill got singled out for the roughing the passer, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the game, that's something. And you know what? In a when there are that many players in a rotation, you can't be a liability because they'll just go with somebody else. If you're the only one they feel like who can play,
right,
maybe you have a little bit more freedom to make plays like that, although you still don't want to be doing it. But no, when it's and Trill's a veteran player. I'm sure that it's probably just a bump in the road. But it was significant enough for Coach Malzahn to sing or for Coach Freeze to single it out right after the game.
One thing we haven't talked about today is the offensive line. I mean, there was a lot of talk about.
Called a Malzahn because I was about to make a UCF point, but I'll
okay.
Hold it, I'll
well,
hold it
well, no, go ahead.
Well, no. That was one of the teams where they were one of the teams where it wasn't they weren't able to build a 21-28 point mm-hmm. lead in the first quarter. They had to sort of weather the early storm.
Yeah,
of,
eventually one big.
Yeah,
one going
but,
away.
But it wasn't as though they were able. I mean, the first couple, I think. That's a situation where Coach Malzahn would have wanted a much smoother first couple of drives to benefit UCF, and I think that's the contrast versus what Auburn got from Hugh Freeze on Saturday is that, you know, you'd love even if the final score looks good, you really want those first couple of drives to be smooth sailing, and Auburn got the benefit of that on Saturday.
Oh, no question about it. Again, as we were saying, I mean, Auburn only ran 46 plays.
That's amazing.
46 plays for 70 points. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I mean, they didn't score the last couple of possessions. Auburn was averaging for Dan and I were there, and I was wandering up and down and mentioned it. Auburn was averaging like 2 points a play.
That's crazy.
I mean, as things were going there in the ball game, they were scoring that quickly. But we haven't talked about the offensive line, and that was one of the things, the only spot on the offense. You know, we saw, again, all the oars on the defensive side on the depth chart that is provided on the release. Mm-hmm. This week's release looks pretty much exactly as last week's release. With on offense, the only oar is there at left tackle. But Tyler Johnson got the start and appeared to have a pretty good ball game, Brian.
He did. Euphries praised him today. I think he said he might have had a couple of misassignments. That was it. Mm-hmm. But said he was really good in his pass pro. Percy Lewis rotated in there. And I believe of the 16 scholarship offensive linemen, 14 played. Does that sound right?
Yeah, did not see Clay Whedon nor Favor Edwin.
Yep.
And I believe there were only about three other scholarship players that didn't play.
Yeah, so they were able to get a lot of guys playing time, able to look at both left tackles, get them a lot of snaps. I think that'll continue.
We
with
didn't
Percy
see Dillon at left tackle, I don't think.
I don't remember.
But it may have been just because Auburn was scoring so quickly, and then the first group didn't really play in the second half.
Yep. So,
I think they probably want.
Well.
Maybe they want to evaluate some of the other tackles. You know, feeling like they know what they have with Dillon Wade, their tackle. I mean, if anything,
I mean, it's funny. You want more film, but you don't want. It's like, well, let's don't score. Let's stay out there a little longer so I can watch more film.
Well, I think the first guys out there of the second group was Percy Lewis.
Yes,
Braden Joyner. Who
Tate
else?
Johnson.
And Tate Johnson. Yeah, those are three up next guys.
Ronan Chambers. Yeah, then you had.
Tate went in for Jeremiah when they started subbing in second team offensive lineman because they wanted Connor to stay out there. So it was Connor and Dylan.
Tate went over to center after a little while.
Yes,
too.
Tate went over to center when Ronan Chambers went in at tackle and felt like you had an entire full second unit.
So they rotated a good bit. And that's one of the things, you know, Hugh mentioned that today, saying, you know, hey, it's not receiver. At receiver, he wants that fluidity,
right?
And he named seven guys there at receiver, and I think you're going to see those seven players come in. As he said, hey, if there's a streak where a receiver is running a long route, running the distance of the field, and there's another play coming up, they're going to come to the sideline. He expects the next one to be in. Now,
was it everyone but Kane and Jackson? Were those the seven he named, or was it?
No, it was
everyone but Kane of the scholarship guys, because he didn't say Kane, right?
Mention Bryce. Maybe he mentioned eight then, because I thought he mentioned Sam, but he mentioned Caleb and Camden.
Yeah, I think he did too. I think it might have been eight. Yeah, it might have been eight. Yeah.
But anyway, yes. I mean,
and they like Bryce Kane, to be clear. It's just
they
a matter
really
of,
do. You know, really, the problem is, Auburn has really four guys who are primary slots.
Right.
And there's just more experience.
There's three at one outside and two at the other outside.
Right.
And I think what really mixed that up was Malcolm Simmons. He's just so good.
Yes.
They need to put him at slot to get him on the field. Because eventually you're going to see more of Cam and Perry outside and Malcolm inside. I mean, next year I think that's your starters, quote unquote,
probably,
and that's one of the best receiving corps in the country, in my opinion. I'm trying not to get too far ahead of myself, but that's going to be electric.
It's not like they wouldn't like to add to
it.
Yeah, think about what a player like Malcolm Simmons could do on special teams as a returner, and you don't really factor in what he could do doing other things.
You saw what he did the other day, just being able to find the ball and catch it. For a touchdown on the block punt.
Now, who got the block on the punt, too?
I believe it was credit. I believe Malik.
Okay.
Got the block.
Because I thought Simmons was the first one.
I was asking Dan who got the block first, and I think Dan thought that Malik blocked it and then recovered it.
No, I thought it went off of Simmons and then into the end zone. And
they announced it, but I didn't catch.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, for some reason, that's one where I got to track down the replay there to figure out exactly what happened, because I thought Simmons was the one that the ball initially careened off of, and then he was, because he's looking around as it goes about 50 feet in the air. He's looking around waiting to see where's it going to drop, and he's able to land and recover it. But no, I mean, what a special teams play for Simmons to get a touchdown that way. And that's, I mean, I think people thought about possibility of him as a punt returner, but that's another way to deploy him that could be really useful.
Yeah. Well,
really, I mean,
and that's what's really so much different, so amazingly different, positively different.
He can jump.
A year
too.
Ago, is the number of players that Auburn has like that? That boy, you want to find ways to get them on the field because of what they can do and the differences that they can make. All right, it says, all right, the official scoring says punt blocked by Micah Riley.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the backup tight end.
Yeah, recovered by Malcolm Simmons.
That's
yes.
right.
Yeah. So
did not want to shortchange Micah.
No kidding.
Bellevue, Nebraska's finest, but no, that's a cool special teams play there for Auburn. Very nearly a punt return touchdown from Keontae too.
Oh man, thought it was.
What just 1 foot.
He is so dangerous.
Really is.
As a punt return.
Doesn't need much daylight.
No.
He does not need much daylight to
create.
Yeah, to put your defense. You got to be very careful punting to Keontae. And that was a play where at first I thought Sylvester Smith was celebrating. First I thought, wow, he saw very early on that Keontae. No, he's signaling to Keontae, go this way, come this way. You've got a lane. And Keontae goes around Sylvester Smith to get to that. You know, to get to that spot on the get that lane on the sideline where he very nearly takes it all the way. But you saw some young players for Auburn making big special teams mm-hmm. plays to help the cause. I didn't mention this on special teams too. Jarquez scores. I think I told you guys. I said this off the air. Jarquez scores a 33-yard touchdown to open the scoring for Auburn, and he's out there on kickoff coverage.
Right, on the ensuing kickoff.
Yeah, because Tanner Burns doesn't want to visit in his office from Jarquez again, I guess. But no, I mean, yeah, and he's one of the gunners who now run towards the kicker and then down sort of the middle of the field as the way off. It's almost like imagine folding your kickoff coverage in and then sending those outside guys in alongside the kicker. I guess it allows them to get a running start. It allows them to get a running start sort of horizontally. And then they can curve.
I hadn't really noticed that.
Yeah, it's an unusual.
Because Towns Magoo was kicking the ball, hitting the wall at the back of the end zone. I mean,
he was crushing those kickoffs.
Goodness, I thought he was going to, you know, it's like he's going to kick multiple ones through the uprights. It's like his legs getting a little tired after a while. Finally, Ian Vachon gets
the other thing in. I noticed special teams wise was Alec McPherson did not dress out, but he went out there in his regular clothes and went through warmups. Like he was in the stretching line and everything. Yeah, I thought that was great.
I didn't notice that.
I'm going to do everything I can to get ready. Yeah. So hopefully he'll be back soon.
He's been kicking in practice. In the meantime, it's in capable, well, you used very to say capable hands. Capable oh, leg.
Yes, there you go.
of Towns, capable of feet. Magoo. Yes, absolutely. All right, we'll get to our final break. You know, we might talk quarterbacks when we come back. We haven't really talked about quarterback play.
Yeah.
And that's all people thought that, you know, we'd be talking about.
Good sign.
After the first game,
it's a good sign that we haven't spent this show talking about quarterbacks.
Back with the final segment of the Monday Drive.
Secretary of State, in Alabama, election integrity is a top priority. We must
email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment here on this Monday. And, yes, Dan, I agree. I mentioned we haven't really talked that much about the quarterback play. Peyton Thorne, Hank Brown, and then Holden Gurner all got in the ball game, and it was, as you know, some callers had said, "Hey, I want to see a lot of the backup quarterback," and you saw about as much as you could in a 10-minute quarter session that Auburn had there for the second half.
Hank came in; he was 3 of 5. I think you said he should have been 4 of 5.
Yeah, he had a drop.
For 2 touchdowns, almost 100 yards. Mm-hmm. So he looked good. Holden got in there for a couple of series, completed a couple of passes. But Peyton Thorne, 13 of 21, I think he had a couple drops.
He had a couple dropped too, yes.
Yep. I know Rivaldo had at least one of those. But 322 yards, 4 touchdowns on the first half. That's better than anything he did in any game all of last season.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and again, you do have to consider the competition.
Sure.
And that's going to have, you know, it's going to be much more difficult
Auburn didn't,
this week.
But you know what? Considering the competition, we've seen Auburn play games against FCS.
We're talking about 132 years of Auburn football. They play plenty of outmatched teams.
You're absolutely right.
And think about the last, you know, the last 5-10 years when you've seen Auburn in season. Like, remember coming out of games against FCS opponents or the 8-point victory against San Jose State, right, where we're thinking, well, you're still waiting to see if that offense can generate explosive plays against anyone.
You didn't have to worry about, are they holding anything back?
No. It feels like offense. this is an Auburn team that wants
to show that immediately.
Yeah, they've got multiple home run hitters.
I think it's great to show other teams, like, okay, look, we'll do this. So you better
get ready for all of
this guy or that guy or the other guy.
You know what? Auburn didn't really show. I mean, I think there are players capable of creating big plays that didn't create big plays.
I agree.
On Saturday.
Oh, Cobb was
so close on a couple of those runs to blasting one, and instead it might go unnoticed.
Well, I mean, we didn't even see any real motion and jet sweep type things, or not a lot of the quote eye candy unquote that you might see. I mean, I thought it was pretty vanilla Saturday, both offensively and defensively. That sounds crazy when you get a 73-3 game, but it was like, okay, they're giving us that. We're going to keep doing it until they stop it. And then defensively, they didn't have to do an awful lot and show lots of stunts and different looks and things like that. It was just pretty much line up, and they have a lot more, but they've got plenty to work on. Again, it's really surprising to think you only get 46 offensive snaps. They probably would have liked more. But, I mean, I applaud Hugh Freeze and Auburn for agreeing with Alabama A&M to reduce the second half to 10-minute quarters.
Probably good for the fans in that heat all day and all evening. And,
I mean, what was it going to do? I mean, you'd get a few more plays
with a bunch of recruits in town. What's post game like for Hugh Freeze? Like, I mean, how much? I mean, what kind of constraints on his time?
Well, the first thing that Hugh Freeze does that the last couple of coaches really struggled with was getting in there and getting his interview done with us and getting that out of the way, which is the way you should do it, right? So,
yeah.
Instead of trying to catch everybody before they leave, you get in there, get it done, get out, and then you've got all that time to spend as much time as you want with the recruits instead of feeling your rush to get with them and then get with us. So I think he does a great job with that. But I just think the entire recruiting experience Saturday, that first game, was above and beyond what you'd ever expect from an Auburn game against Alabama A&M. The crowd, the students, the noise, the atmosphere, Tiger Walk. Everything was top-notch. I think Auburn has a lot to be proud of. I think that says a lot just about Auburn. You know, Auburn loves Auburn, and you saw that Saturday. And the recruits that were there saw that too. So that's just another thing that Freeze can put into his pocket there and say, this is what makes Auburn special.
Yeah, no question, an excellent start.
Yep.
And Brian, you've helped us get off to a really good start here this week. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you and all the folks there at AuburnSports.com.
Talked to you, Freeze, this morning. Got that video up on our site. Got a story up. Got our rundown, our podcast we did earlier today. That's up. We'll have plenty more coverage from the football program. Tiger Talk tonight coming up right now.
That's exactly right. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Players and practice tomorrow. Video tomorrow. All that more recruiting. Could be some big recruiting news in the coming week or two. AuburnSports.com.
We're back with you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody.
Yellowwood knows that a five-star backyard is the place to make lasting memories, like cookouts, cornhole with friends,